Turris comes in. Wide right, got around Fleury. Turris comes back. Now Smith breaking in. He scores! Craig Smith on a feed from Kyle Turris. It's 1-0 Nashville.
There you go. Predators get it done. Final home game of the preseason was last night. Another really good crowd in the house as the Predators skate away with a 3-0 shutout. Pecorine in net. Craig Smith with a power play goal in the second, and then two Ekholm goals in the third. 3-0 Preds. Same two teams tomorrow night in Raleigh. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Adam Vinken from The Athletic. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. And Willie, I heard I got a nice little shout out on the broadcast last night, so thank you for that.
Absolutely. We did. I thought it was a good exercise, and we were just talking about Dante Fabbro and how he won the poll. We discussed it on the show yesterday.
Yep.
And so good stuff. Good stuff.
He also got a shout out on radio twice.
I thought Dante Fabbro played a very solid game as well last night. He must have completed four or five, and a high percentage of them too. It's not like he missed six, right? But he has a precision pass long distance. It's very smooth. He just does a lot of subtle things that are very good.
Yeah, and I know that you saw this article, Willie, a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, also in The Athletic. Yeah.
Scott Wheeler, who does a really great job covering prospects, has this series called The Gifted, where he breaks down what makes every top prospect in the league so special. And his point about Dante Fabbro is that he makes the intricate look so simple. The plays that he makes, the ability that he has to make everything look so smooth and as if it's not really requiring too much effort. But that just goes to the maturity and the skill that Dante has at a young age.
Steven Santini may have been onto something. Maybe the answer is going to be Matthias Ekholm, which he had two goals last night, looked really good, has looked good in preseason. And what's intriguing about this is we know his defensive pairing guy, his partner, the guy that's played alongside him the last three seasons, is gone. And maybe this is going to give Ekholm a time to shine a little bit more, because I think when 76 was on the ice, he was going to be the more aggressive player and more in the action, and maybe Matthias had to cheat a little bit and hang back. And maybe that will not be the case if indeed he is paired up with the young man Dante Fabbro, who we're talking about. Maybe this is the year that Ekholm shines.
Yeah, it certainly could be, and those are some great points. And I was thinking about this earlier today. So last year at midseason, we at the Professional Hockey Writers Association did this midseason awards poll where it was just for, to have a topic of conversation, and we voted on all of the major awards, and then we also created our own awards and voted on them. And we created the Rod Langway Award for the best, the defenseman who best excels at the defensive aspects of the game. And Matthias won the vote among my colleagues. Well, the interesting part of it was I think the reason why he was getting so much recognition was, as you all remember, he had a career high in points by the All-Star break last year. And that's the interesting thing about quote-unquote defensive defensemen or defensemen who excel at the defensive aspect of the game is they don't really always get the recognition they deserve unless they start putting up points. And that's what Matthias did in the second half of last year. He didn't have as many points, in the first half of the year. He didn't have as many points in the second half of the year. But Matthias has been a steady, elite caliber, in my opinion, defenseman in the defensive zone for a few years now. And as we all know, living here and covering this team and watching this team, because you have so many good defensemen, one is always going to be underrated. I mean, Roman Josi was that defenseman several years ago. Seth Jones was that guy. Ryan Ellis. Now it seems like it's Matthias's turn to be that guy. And I do think that he got some Norris love. I think he finished 10th in Norris Trophy voting last year. So he was definitely on a lot of people's radar. So I think that this year, as to your point, Darren, without PK here, maybe Matthias handles a little bit more responsibility, gets to be a little bit more active in the offensive zone.
You know what also comes to mind as you say that, Adam, and I'd have to go back and look, but one of his best offensive stretches last year was when PK Subban was hurt and he was playing with Dan Hamhuis. And so he was able to push offense more with Dan Hamhuis being more of a stay-at-home guy. And, of course, Dan Hamhuis is still around. That is a pair that they're very comfortable with should Dante Fabbro have some growing pains in there. But it also illustrates that when he's not paired with P.K. Subban, maybe he's thinking offense more.
Yeah, that's certainly a good point and worth something discussing with him as the regular season approaches. I'll make a note of that. But, yeah, I really do think when I look at this defensive roster, and we talked about Dante Fabbro, and we assume Dante will be playing with Matias to start the season. You know, I also wondered, I think we talked about this when I was in studio recently, Willie, you know, whether or not they rely on Dan Hamhuis a little bit more this season in spot duty with Matias at home based on matchups, based on defensive zone starts, because I think the Predators, they have confidence in Dante Fabbro to give him a lot of responsibility, but I don't think they want to throw him in completely head first. So I think having a veteran like Dan Hamhuis, you know, who can jump into a defensive situation with Matias Ekholm every once in a while, you know, I think will help Dante. I'm very curious to see, after a good sample, maybe the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, what Dante's time on ice breakdown is in terms of even strength time, as well as his deployment in terms of zone starts, to see if the Predators are going to try to shelter him at all, or to say, hey, we have the confidence in you to do it right away, you know, go for it.
I told you last night in pregame that my answer to player who is primed for a big season is 95. I think Matt Duchene is primed for a big season, and I have not changed at all after these two preseason games. And I think what's interesting is we talk about in other sports certain players that command their presence, it commands attention, and you have to know where they are at all times, and you have to pay attention to them more, and maybe you have to cheat, and when you give them more attention, that means that opens up things for everybody else. And I think him out on the ice, his presence does command attention. And you better know where he is at all times. And I have liked a lot what I've seen. And I still feel strongly that my answer is the one that's probably I don't feel any differently. I just really like what he brings to the table. Now we'll see how this all plays out in the regular season. But so far, so good in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he has really stood out in the games he's played. And, you know, I feel like he is really hard to knock off the puck. I mean, he's really slick with his stick handling and really smart with the way he approaches the offensive zone and how he's able to shield off defenders. I've been really impressed with that. And I wonder, you know, we know that this is his fourth team since the start of the 2017-18 season, which is kind of hard to believe when you think about it. But, you know, he started that season in Colorado, got traded to Ottawa, then last year traded to Columbus, and now he's here. You know, he really hasn't had any semblance of normalcy in his life over the last couple of years. And in talking to him, I think he knew, just based on where he thought his career was going, that this would be something that he would have to deal with for a couple of years. But we know how comfortable he already seems to be here. And I think that's evident with how he's been able to play, even in the preseason. And I'm really curious to see, once this team's opening night roster is confirmed, we've seen a lot of him with Philip Forsberg and Mikael Granlund. I really like the idea of that line. I like the idea of having two strong shooters and Duchene and Forsberg with a strong playmaker in Mikael Granlund. I think that can help Granlund as well. I think it can balance out the depth in the top six. So I really do think that Matt Duchene adds an element to this team that hasn't been here in a while. Now, of course, a couple of years ago, we said the same thing about Kyle Turris. But I really just think that Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene complement each other as top six centers. Their games are different. It gives you a different look, a different attitude with each way that their lines come onto the ice. So I really like what I've seen from Matt Duchene. He had 70 points last year. You know, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. And it's been since 2008 was the last time the Predators had a 70-point score. And I think the potential for them having multiple 70-point scores is on the table.
I spoke with Daniel Carr for pregame. I spoke with Santini in second period intermission. And we had Tenorti up in Barrel House for postgame. There's three spots left. How do you assess those three guys as they're going to whittle their roster down to where it needs to be in the next 48 hours? How do you see it all playing out?
It's hard because when you look at those three players in particular, Jared Tenorti, he hasn't played an NHL regular season game in more than 3.5 years. March 2016 was the last time that Tenorti played in the NHL. He was a first-round pick in 2010. Since then, I think he has around 55 to 60 games of NHL experience, so he hasn't really lived up to expectations. But he's a towering presence. You know, he would add that level of physicality that this team doesn't necessarily have as much of anymore with all the players they lost during the offseason. You know, I think perhaps he's the quote-unquote easiest of the cuts to make. You know, I expect him to go back to Milwaukee, but I think he's earned himself a call-up at some point during the season, which he hasn't had in a few years. Daniel Carr, and I think we've talked about this before, Darren, when I look at the remaining players, all of them have to go through waivers in order to get sent down to the Milwaukee Admirals. I feel like if you had to handicap their chances of making it through waivers, I think Daniel Carr has the worst odds of making it through waivers without being claimed because of this season last year. The fact he's on a league minimum deal, I think, would be enticing to a lot of teams. So I think he makes the team almost by default because of that reason. And Steven Santini, I look at him as well, you know, a defensive-minded defenseman. We look at the trade that brought him here. I know that the trade of P.K. Subban was more for cap reasons, but I'm not sure how great of a look it is if you trade P.K. Subban, even if it was for a different purpose, and you waive the guy that you got back for him as the most NHL-ready player in the return. So I think he makes it too. Almost by that reason, which means, one of Freddie Goudreau, Mika Salamaki, and Matt Irwin, are on the proverbial chopping block. I mean, I think it's going to make for a really interesting next couple of days until Tuesday by 4 p.m., I believe it is, Central Time, that they have to submit the roster.
Do you think they wait that long, or do you think this is done pretty much when preseason concludes for them?
I think they wait. I think they're going to have some really hard decisions to make because a player who's been on this roster on a regular basis, whether it's as in the lineup or as an extra, some one of those players is not going to be on this team because the numbers don't work out. So I think they're going to take as much time as they can to come to that decision.
And the game is going to be what day can I do this that gives me the best chance of sliding them to Milwaukee? So you wouldn't want to lose any of those guys, any of the people that you waived. You'd like to keep them in your stable, and remember that every team has got some of these decisions, right? Or at least every team that has any semblance of depth at all has to waive one or two guys that they'd rather not lose to another team. But that's kind of the game that gets played all throughout the year.
Yep.
Right. It's definitely like being, at a table in the casino in Las Vegas. You have to look at the odds a little bit. You have to look about, okay, which day do we feel like the biggest dump of players is going to be? And let's just try to get, our guys in that way so they're not sticking out. If they waive two or three guys and there are only six or seven players on the waiver wire that day, they stick out a lot more. It really is a game of chance, the waiver wire.
We'll come back more with Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Right now, we're looking for somebody to play 18 minutes a night up front on the forward position. And so that's a battle inside of our camp, and we're trying to evaluate that to get that right and to get that piece right. And it doesn't have to be something that's written in stone and that's it. It's the way it is. But right now, we're looking to start something and then maybe show a little bit of patience with it as well and give it an opportunity to see if there's some chemistry.
That was Peter Laviolette with our show from training camp on Tuesday at Centennial Sportsplex. We're here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase, joined by Adam Vingan from The Athletic, who covers the Nashville Predators. So, Adam, I've heard him throw that out in some various interviews, but it really locked in when he said it with us. There's a pretty good competition going right now. The way they have constructed the roster with Subban going out, Duchesne coming in, they want to have two powerful 1A lines, not just the first line and the second line. And we know all year long how much discussion we had about the lack of the second line ever kind of coming into form. And so Let's ask the question that they're looking at right now, and that is, can Kyle Turris win the job, basically, on the wing in one of those top two lines? Because regardless of what happens, you're going to have a guy who's played a lot of top 6 minutes that isn't in the top six, at least to start the year, if everybody's healthy.
Right, because if Kyle Turris is not cut out for the wing, he might go to the third line and center the third line. And if Kyle Turris sticks on the wing, as he's been practicing with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, Craig Smith looks like the player that might be moving down to the third line, which helps your bottom six scoring to have a guy who regularly scores 20-plus goals pretty much every year. But you're right. I mean, the Kyle Turris on wing thing is very interesting to me because, admittedly, I was skeptical of it when it was first broached, just because he doesn't have any experience playing there. I mean, the first day of camp, I asked him, you know, when was the last time you played wing? And he said he couldn't remember. He had to think about it. He said there were spots here and there, and then over the course of games, sometimes positions switch. But in terms of starting and playing as a wing full time, I'm not sure he's ever done that at the NHL level. But one positive to that is he is, as we talked about, Willie, last week, historically is a strong shooter. I mean, he had three seasons of 20-plus goals with the Ottawa Senators, and he hasn't really been able to use that here, or at least put it to much use. And by being on that line, being on the wing, which, you know, generally has fewer responsibilities than being a center, he wouldn't have to be the playmaker because Ryan Johansson would have that responsibility. He could focus on being the shooter and the finisher with Victor Arvidsson, and I think that could help. I mean,
I agree.
Really, they're trying to squeeze whatever value out of Kyle Turris they can because, you know, at this point right now, they're kind of stuck with him because that contract is not, you know, palatable to pretty much anybody. But I do think that this could be a good opportunity for Kyle. I mean, if you can't produce with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, you know, you're in trouble, generally speaking. But, you know, with Kyle, I like the idea. I've warmed up to it, and I'm curious to see what it looks like if that is the case on opening night and give them a big enough sample to show what exactly they could do as a unit.
I'm with you. My observation is there were a lot of times last year where I didn't think Kyle Turris was looking to shoot, was in position to shoot, and you would go through a handful of games and you would look at shots and shot attempts and there'd be a lot of nothing on there, even in situations where you needed offensive production for him. And I see just in these games, in the exhibition games, now you have to have it in perspective. Last night was not the Carolina Hurricanes. It was more the Charlotte Checkers that they were playing. But in the games that I've seen, he is looking to shoot. He is making use of the space. And he's got a shot that is a dangerous shot, as you pointed out. So maybe this is what he needs. He seems to embrace it a little bit, and that probably is the best way to create two lines where it's hard to distinguish what's the first line and what's the second line.
Yeah, for sure. And like we talked about before the break, you know, I really like the idea of Granlund, Duchesne, and Forsberg. I went back over the summer and was looking to Mikael Granlund a little bit closer just because he did not perform as we all expected him to at the trade deadline for a number of reasons. But I found that his most common line mates in Minnesota were Miku Koivu and Jason Zucker. And that line, from an analytical standpoint, was phenomenal in terms of controlling scoring chances, expected goal percentage, all of the fancy stats we like to use, Willie. They were really, really good. And I look at the makeup of that. I look up the makeup of that line. You know, Granlund, you know, he was among one of the better players in the league in terms of primary assists per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. I mean, he is a really good playmaker. And, you know, having him on a line with Duchesne, who also has playmaking ability, but Duchesne is also more of a scorer. And having Forsberg, as we know, who is definitely a scorer. I really like the idea of maybe of Granlund being, you know, the engine of that line, you know, being the distributor and getting the puck to Duchesne and Forsberg in places where they can shoot and score. You know, and I think that sort of works to the way that also works on the top line with Johansson as we know, can feed Arvidsson, and now he can feed Turris. So, you know, I think the potential of having a 1A and 1B line is greater than maybe it's ever been in Nashville with the potential of this top six.
Then the next question becomes, how do you best utilize Craig Smith? Because once you have those top six, you're going to want to play those guys a lot of minutes. Somewhere in there, you're going to have a checking line, and maybe Craig Smith is on that more or less checking line, and you're looking for more scoring for that. I do think he's a very reliable player in his own end. But that would force you to sort of break up the traditional checking line of Sissons, Bonino, and Watson. So they got options there, and all of this to say, there might be a line that gets less minutes unless they're ahead and they can roll the four lines. But at the same time, you have four lines that all would bring something to the table in terms of a little extra offensive punch that has been missing.
Well, remember, you definitely remember, you were there. Late in the season when Kyle Turris was scratched in the final two games of that West Coast road trip against Los Angeles and San Jose, the line that Peter Laviolette put on the ice was Callie Yarncroke, Colton Sissons, and Craig Smith.
Yes.
And they played really well in a small sample. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them go back to that. You know, Colton Sissons is an interesting, is an interesting cog in all of this, because we've seen over the course of his NHL career, one, he has shown improvement in every season he's been on this roster full time. He just signed a contract, a 7-year contract. And I really do think that he has another gear to get to. I think his offensive game is certainly, bound to improve. So I think that if you had a line of those three, for example, you do have three players who are defensively reliable. You have players that have shown to be able to score. I mean, Callie Yarncroke had a rough year last year offensively, but he has shown in the past to be able to score. I think he had 16 goals 2 years ago. It's not a traditional checking line, as you said, in the sense of the Sissons, Bonino, Watson line we've seen in the past, but it does have the ability to be effective in all three zones.
And if you did that line, then you still have Bonino and Watson as a pretty good tandem that could handle a lot of responsibility. And you could throw a speed element in there with Grimaldi.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's really going to be interesting to see what they end up coming out with against Minnesota a week from today. I do think there are a lot of options there, and I think people should be intrigued by that.
Adam, good visit as always. Appreciate it. We'll chat soon.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Back to wrap up Thursday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.